Hello, welcome to The Musics in Japan,
a conversational podcast about daily life for an American couple living long-term in Japan.
So lately I've been thinking a lot about how much I miss our son. So when I get sick, I get really melancholy. And I've been sick for about 4 weeks now, and I've been melancholy the entire time. And I've just been wanting our son to move back in.
Yeah, so he was here for a lot of the pandemic and moved out, what, first week of November or so?
Yeah, well, as soon as his new bed came.
Yeah.
Because he bought a new bed and it was delivered.
I don't want to sleep on the couch anymore. I want to sleep on my nice, comfortable bed.
Now, he didn't have to sleep on a couch. It's a foldaway bed.
So it's a couch.
Yeah, but it's a foldaway bed that he just chose to never unfold.
Yes.
And instead, what we had done is, so I think we've talked about our beds before.
Yes.
And so we have like a 7-layer bed. And his bed was 4 layers, I think. So he brought his 4 layers of futons and just basically bed mats and put them on top of the couch. And he was like, this is super comfy. And I was like, no, when your bed comes, you're going to be like, why have I been denying myself a bed for years? So I offered to buy him a bed 5 years ago.
Right.
Or 6 years ago now when he first moved out. And he was like, no, thank you.
Yeah. And I think you and I know why we've chosen not to have beds. But
because they don't make king size beds in Japan.
Right. But when we left the U.S., he was still sleeping on bunk beds, which are basically useless as far as comfort.
No, he had a really comfortable bunk bed. We would fall asleep in his bed with him. At least I would sometimes. It was super comfy.
Yeah.
And he had a bed when he was here that was super comfy.
He did, yes.
And through various bad behaviors, he lost his room. But we're not going to talk about that. We're not going to put him on blast. It was a private time during his teenage years.
It was. He was just very bad at finding things. He's like, I don't know where my room is anymore. Now he keeps better track of it.
Yeah. And so he moved out when he was 20. And that's the age of adulthood here in Japan. And it wasn't as smooth of a move out as I wanted it to be. And then he moved back in March. And then he moved out again in November. And again, it was not, there was like no ceremony. He was just like, okay, I'm going now, bye. And there was like this big long talk leading up to it about how he would sleep here during the week, but go home on the weekends and sleep. And he hasn't slept here since.
No.
So we're like 2 months on, or a month and a half now.
Well, and he only lives a 10-minute walk or a 20-minute drive away. So it's...
It's not a 20-minute drive.
How long does it take? Door to door.
It's a 20-minute walk. It's a 10-minute drive.
Okay. I get those two mixed up because door to door, like when we call him and say, hey, come over, it seems like it takes a while.
It takes him 15 to 20 minutes to leave his house.
Okay. See, I don't see that part.
Yeah. He's like me. Like if you told me, okay, we got to go right now, I'd say, okay. And the fastest you can get me from bed to front door is about 20 to 30 minutes. It takes me 10 minutes to put my shoes on.
Sometimes, yeah. I've seen you move faster than that when you were truly like running late someplace. But your usual speed, yeah, is 10 minutes or so to put your shoes on.
Yeah, I don't rush.
Not anymore.
I've never rushed. When have you ever known me to be someone who rushed?
There was a time when you were supporting us financially and you were teaching and every once in a while, you would be running late and you would rush.
It was really rare.
It was really rare, yes. And I feel like you were only doing that because you knew that like all our hopes were resting on you financially.
Yeah.
But we're not in that position anymore. Neither one of us is bearing that brunt alone.
Yeah. So right now, I feel like the best medicine in the whole world would be my son snuggling in bed with me. And I feel so selfish and needy, so I haven't asked him for it. Mm-hmm. If I asked him to, he would completely come over here, move in, move back in, and lay in bed with me the entire time that I'm sick.
Right.
And it does actually make me feel better. Like, I don't know if it's the pheromones or the exchanges that happen, like the chemical exchanges that happen between a mother and child, but the other day he came over and I was like, snuggle me.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like medicine. I felt like I was wrapped in medicine. And I felt like, okay, I have to let him go home now. And so I released him back to his home. I know that when he hears this, he's going to be like, you should have just told me. I would have stayed the night. It's not a big deal. Like, but I feel like it's a huge deal because I've always worked really hard for him to not be my worry doll.
Right.
And not be where I put any of my sickness or pain.
Well, and I think that's something that he's always felt is like autonomy. And so I think for him, it's not a big deal because you've worked so hard to make it not a big deal. If that makes sense.
But I think having to be this close to me when I'm this sick, knowing that you have the same illnesses, I think it becomes really heavy.
Yeah, I think so.
And so I don't want him to always have to stare in the face his future.
Right.
He wants to be a parent. And when he was little, there were ways that we got around it so that he just didn't notice that I was sick all the time.
Yeah.
And that is when I would get sick, we would just like do a Scooby-Doo marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought it was funny that I would fall asleep every time Scooby-Doo came on. Like, I'd miss it. And then we'd have great talk time because after when I would wake up from my nap, he would tell me about all the different Scooby-Doo, Scrappy-Doos.
After first being sure that you didn't want him to rewatch it so that you could watch it with him this time.
Yeah. And he would just word shower and tell me all about it. And I would be very interested and engaged. And then he loved sleeping in the big bed.
Yeah.
And so sleeping in the big bed was not a big deal for him. He was just like, this is a party. And he looked at it more as like a sleepover.
Mm-hmm.
And then as he started to get older, it became more obvious. And then it was real heavy for a couple of years. And we had to kind of work our way around to where it's not as heavy. But I think it's still, I don't think it's ever gotten light like it used to be when he was little.
Yeah. I think just him knowing that you were in the hospital for 6 months, there was not any kind of working around that.
Yeah.
And so that was a little bit tough. I think that's when he kind of became cognizant of it, which was like 12, 13.
Yeah.
When it wasn't possible to hide it from him. But he's very loving.
Not when he was 12, 13. It was when he was 9. No, when he was 10 or 11.
10 or 11. I get mixed. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Because we came here permanently when he was 12.
Yeah.
Because you moved here a couple of years before we did to learn the language and get everything set up. And then ended up coming back. And I always get that gap mixed up.
Yeah. And then he was, like, really mad at me.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to, like, test me to see that I was strong and sturdy. Because even after the hospitalizations were over, it was still a lot of years being sick.
Yes.
And not being able to function. And that digging myself out of that hole. And understanding how to manage my two illnesses. And they would be easier to manage if just once a year I could go to the hospital.
Right.
And stay in the hospital for a week. And have them do all the stuff they need to do. Like a once a year tune-up. But they always want to do more. They won't ever just do like the minimum. Which is keep me on IV fluids. Nothing by mouth. Pain management. Just do that for a week. And my body's fine. So I do as close to that at home as I can.
Well, and I think that's part of how our annual week-long trip got the way that it got.
Yeah.
Which we haven't been able to do this year because of COVID and because everybody is being completely irresponsible here in Japan. So just record surge and all of that bad stuff. Because I think going to a hotel for a week and knowing that you can pick just one thing and it's going to be consistently available, whatever that thing is, like whether it's something at the buffet or a particular room service thing or something.
Yeah.
Because they have a consistent selection of food that is not always possible at the grocery store.
Yeah.
So I know today I went to the grocery store to get things, and the list sometimes includes three or four backups for a particular item because there's no guarantee that anything in particular will be there.
Yeah. And so that's really challenging and really hard, and I feel bad. I don't know what else to talk about, like, other than I'm tired and I'm sick. I think I'm getting a little bit better.
You seem to be getting a little bit better, but you have been tired and you have been sick. And I think that one thing that you've done a really good job at over the years is helping our son understand the things that make things permanently worse.
Yeah.
So I feel like, as crappy as it is, you kind of going first, which, because you're older, is going to happen. You've been able to steer him away from things that would make him permanently sicker.
Yeah.
So I don't think that he will have it as bad as you, despite having the same illnesses.
Yeah. And we can already see it, because at his age, I was a lot sicker than
yes.
he is.
Yes.
Because we didn't know about the HCP. So I've known my whole life that I had lupus. And so I've dealt with my lupus as any young person would, by just ignoring it.
Mm-hmm.
And then being hospitalized when it got too bad. And then when I found out I had HCP, it was a whole new thing to learn, a whole new set of things to learn. And my hereditary corporal porphyria, because it's reactive to the sun, being in Japan, I was walking a lot because I don't have a car.
Right.
And so I was spending a lot of time in the sun, which meant I was always sick. And it got so bad, they told me, like, you need to return to the United States because we think you're going to die. And it was just so strange. Then it was a lot of years discovering what was wrong. I think we've said all this before. I have wicked deja vu today, and I feel incredibly boring, which makes it incredibly challenging to do a podcast.
I know, but see, I'm finding this really interesting. I'm not having deja vu about it, which is weird because I have deja vu ordinarily.
Yeah.
So I'm having jamais vu. That's the word for it. The feeling that you've never experienced something before.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't feel like we've had this specific conversation. I know we've talked about ECP and we've talked about that, but talking about your experience of it and your experience of it as a parent, I don't think is something that we have done before.
Mm. It's a really deeply personal thing.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling a little bit guarded about it because I feel so, I think how vulnerable I feel, how frail I feel, and how besieged I feel is really hard to explain, and how hurt and angry I feel.
Yeah.
Like, all of those emotions are really hard for me to cope with right now. And so part of feeling besieged and under siege is that on one hand, I want Rasta here so I know he's safe.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also want him here so he can hold me and make me feel good. And I want him here so I can have this thing that I do where I like rub his hair. So I can rub his hair and smell his neck and have him close to me and feel that love and safety that and comfort that I only get from him laying in bed with me. And it just, it's such a good feeling. It feels like medicine. It's so good. And it makes me feel so secure. And it makes me feel so safe. It is one of the best feelings in the world. But he's 26 and he's going to be getting married soon. I don't know how to explain to his wife that I need him to come over because I'm sick so I can lay in bed with him.
So that you can fall asleep.
Yeah, so that I can fall asleep. I need my son to put me to sleep kind of thing. Because the other day after he was over and he laid in bed with me, I slept for like 10 hours.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anybody will ever understand that unless they have a chronic illness themselves.
Yeah, how certain things can just kind of be that feeling of safety and comfort. I see people on Twitter get it from pets, which... I'm not a pet person, and you're not a pet person, so I don't think either one of us get that. But Rasta has such unconditional love for you.
Yeah.
And for me, too. I'm not feeling left out on this. I'm just saying that for you is the relevant part here, that I think that there's that sense of absolute safety. Like,
yeah.
he might thoughtlessly hurt your feelings, just like I might, but he's never going to intentionally hurt your feelings or...
There have been times he's intentionally hurt my feeling. But when I'm sick, he becomes a particular kind of gentle.
Mm.
And he knows the exact type of gentle I need. And he just comes, and he's really good at not taking up any emotional space. He just comes with just such a beautiful, big, open heart. And it's just pure outpouring of love. And he's been sending me really loving messages every day, which I asked him to do, which help a lot. I save them. And then when I'm feeling really just lost, lonely girl, then I'm like, okay, nobody loves me. Everybody hates me. I guess I'm going to eat worms. And I look and there's a message from him, and it's really quite buoying. It makes me feel really good.
Yeah.
Because being this sick, it's really hard to see any self-worth. It's hard to have self-worth when you have a chronic illness, which is really common among people with chronic illness, is to have difficulties feeling like they have worth.
It is.
And with disability.
And I can see how it coming from him, not just because he's your son, but because he has the same illness. So you know that he knows exactly how you're feeling.
Yeah.
Because although I have things, they're not your things. And sometimes they're in conflict, and I don't feel exactly the way you feel, just like you don't feel exactly the way I feel.
Yeah.
But he's got that thing of, you know, that he has felt whatever you're feeling, he's feeling exactly that. So I think it doesn't take very many words to tell him where you're at.
Yeah.
You could just be like, I'm at this spot. And he knows just by the way you move your hand what spot you're at.
Yeah. That makes me kind of sad for him. For when I die, he's not going to have anyone. He's going to be in the spot where I am now, because his child will not have hereditary corporal porphyria.
Right.
Because it's passed on through the mother's genetic bloodline rather than the father. So it can only be passed down from mother to child. And so if he were my daughter, he could pass it on to his children. People are like, what about if he has a daughter? No, it doesn't work that way. His daughter will still not have my maternal DNA. Because I'm not going to be his child's mother. Hello, follow the genetics.
It's autosomal recessive. So if he has a daughter, his daughter could be a carrier but wouldn't have it.
Yeah. And if her daughter married somebody whose mother also had it, or who had it, they would not then produce it. It dies out with him.
Mm.
A really strange disease. A really, really strange disease. So my mother's mother had it. My mother had it, and I have it, and my son has it. And so every female in my maternal bloodline has had it.
Yeah. And I know when we looked it up.
My great-grandmother had it. My great-great-grandmother had it.
And when we looked it up.
My mother's side. And they all died really young.
Yeah, in their 50s.
Yeah.
When we looked it up, before you got diagnosed, you know, we looked at all the different things and the groups that are more likely to get it. And when we went and saw your doctor was like, well, you don't have it. And when he looked up, he's like, well, and you know, only Jewish people. It's like much more prominent amongst Jewish people and Swedish people. And you're neither one. And you're like, actually.
Yeah, actually I'm Jewish, but right on.
Yeah. So I feel bad for you. But my feeling bad for you doesn't carry the same kind of sympathy and empathy that Rostas does. And so I agree that he is good medicine for you.
It's hard, too, because, like, he's good medicine. He's not married yet. But with his last girlfriend, there were issues with how much I talked to him. It was upsetting for her. So it's not the right girl for him. They broke up. But I don't see how anybody tolerates that much intrusion into their life. That's like, they need to have, I believe every couple needs to have time that is private and their own.
Yeah.
And that's important for intimacy. And if one of the partners is always on call, always on edge, there's an edge to that that Rasta doesn't deserve to have in his life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think he's feeling amazing this week. I think, you know, we had a hard run this year. it was one of the best years, but we've been super busy. And I think we can all use a break, you know. So giving him and letting him take part of that break and letting him have that break. It's important to me. It matters.
Yeah, I think for the last 6 weeks, you have been working just enormous amounts. And there have been no holidays to break it up. We didn't take Thanksgiving as a holiday here.
Yeah, Japanese Thanksgiving.
Right.
It fell on a Monday. Monday's my day off.
Yeah. And so we just kind of worked through it, and all three of us were working. And I think that that's been usually offset. And I know I said this earlier, it's been usually offset by a trip, but we haven't been able to do that. So,
yeah. Yeah, working 16-hour days definitely is too much for my body.
Yeah, and you're in the dissertation phase, so you're writing your dissertation, and you've been working really hard on that, and really hard at your practice, and hard at our new venture. So, like, you're working three jobs.
Yeah.
And it's exhausting. And
I think I didn't pay attention to my diet. I didn't pay attention to keeping myself hydrated, and I just ran myself into the ground. And now, not having Rasta here living with us, I just feel so lonely and so alone and lost. And there's this thing that happens because you're autistic, that when I'm 100%, I get 75% of what I need from you. And when that percentage goes down, like, in lockstep with, so now I'm functioning about 10%. And so you have to subtract that from what you're able to give me. And so it's like bare minimum. I'm getting bare minimum from you. And I think this is important for people who are with someone who's autistic, that they understand that this is not pointed. This is not pretend. This is not done with any malice. It's just like, I wrote you, so today with the grocery shopping, I think it's a good example. I wrote you a note last night, and I sent it to you via LINE. I usually send them to you via email, but I was too sick to sit up and write an email. So I did it by text from my iPad. I hate sending emails by my iPad, but because I sent it to you by LINE, you woke up last night and responded to it. When you woke up last night and responded to it, I thought, fuck, he's not going to remember anything that I asked him to do. He's not going to check his LINE. I did not send you an email because I was too sick and I didn't have the spoons to send you a thing that says, check your LINE messages.
Yeah, the same reason you didn't send an email in the first place.
Yes. So I knew that when I woke up this morning, I was going to be in the catch-22 of, reward me because I did everything right on your side of the street, because you want emotional reward when you put yourself out for me, like everybody does whenever they put themselves out for someone, and in the emotional reality that you did it all wrong. And that's really painful for both of us, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I did check my email. I thought, I need to go shopping. I'll check my email in case there's anything that's changed. And then when you mentioned later, I sent you LINE, I thought, okay, yeah, I remember waking up to that, reading it, and going back to sleep, because I'm hypervigilant in my sleep. But I also don't remember what happens in my sleep unless I'm reminded of it later.
Yes.
So yeah, it's a tricky thing. And so I don't feel attacked or criticized or anything by you saying this. I do think that if you have a partner who is autistic, is what I can speak to, but I'm assuming it applies to ADHD and other kinds of neurodivergence, that the specificity of communication that I need from you in order to do things the way that you want takes a lot of effort.
Yes, at the exchange rate of 75%.
Right.
Like, if I can get you to do something above 75% that I want, it's a banner day. Like, mm-hmm. And that's usually leaves you feeling very oppressed and upset. So I've set my expectation at 75 because I can get 100% of what I want for you, but it means standing over your shoulder and telling you step by step by step.
Right.
And that's a really negative dynamic in a romantic relationship.
Yes.
So I don't do that. So I said, hey, I'm willing to forego this 25%. If you're willing to forego that, I'm never going to be ecstatic with what you do.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be really hard for me to be like, jump up in the air and be like, oh my God, you're perfect. When I'm like, I can see these things. So usually when you do something for me, it needs some sort of adjustment.
Right.
And so on your side of the street, it's, you're hardly ever able to get, wow, you're amazing. And on my side of the street, I'm hardly ever able to get exactly what I want.
Yeah, I do think that's the trade-off. And we've tried other trade-offs with that. And that seems to be the one that has both of us feeling as good as we can on a consistent basis.
Yeah. And I think that when I'm sick, I'm less specific about it. I think that I do give you, like, more celebration. But when I'm sick, there's no celebration when it's wrong. I'm just like, no,
yeah,
this is wrong. Yeah. Because it has to be so precise for me to get better.
Yes.
Like, what I eat has to be perfect. And what I drink has to be perfect. Like, today, for example, there has to be floating full chunks of ice in the water. It has to be ice cold, and I can take 3 sips at a time. If I take more than 3 sips of water, it'll cause me physical pain. But I have to take 3 sips of water at regular intervals to stay hydrated, but not so much that I'm activating my GI system.
Right.
It's a whole thing. It's a thing, man. Speaking of which, it's time for my 3 sips of water.
We go through a lot of ice at this time, which is okay because we have an automated ice maker. So I'm sure to keep it filled up so that we always have ice.
Yeah, and that is the one thing you do perfectly. We've never run out of ice.
Thank you.
Yeah, perfectly obsessed with us always having ice.
I am, and I think it's because the ice maker doesn't work perfectly.
What do you mean?
I mean that it doesn't actually work right. So the way that the ice maker works is it dumps all of the ice right in front of the sensor that determines whether or not to make more ice. So if I don't, and I have tested this out, but not so much that we've ever run out of ice, but if I don't open the ice drawer and shake it to level out the ice, it just doesn't make more ice, even if we're almost out.
Well, and plus, there's another component. We have to fill up a thing of water.
Yes.
That attaches to the ice maker.
Yes.
And so if that thing runs out of water, and you're always very careful to keep that full of water and keep that clean and connected, because the connector has to be clean or it gets gunky and gross, and there will be stuff in the ice if the hose that sucks into it. So we have clean ice.
Yeah, but it's different. In the U.S., we had one that was hooked directly to the water supply, so we never had to worry about that.
I think most refrigerators that have an ice maker in the U.S. are directly
I think in the U.S., yeah. I think it's in Japan, a
really common thing.
Yeah, I think in Japan, it's a lot more common to have things that don't hook up to a water supply.
Yeah.
There seems to be no assumption that there'll be a water supply. Like the washing machines, the dryers, the dishwashers, all of them have ways to either use a completely external water supply like our ice thing does, or have an extremely long hose that goes to the water so that you can get it because of the centralization. We have basically 3 spots in the apartment that have water, and every apartment above and below ours has exactly those same 3 spots.
And I have a girlfriend who wrote a book. I can't remember the name of the book she wrote, but when she moved here 25 years ago, she moved to a little tiny town out in the middle of nowhere so that her husband could become a karate master. They lived in a dojo and they didn't have running water.
Mm-hmm.
And she raised 3 kids here. And I was just like, her story is so fascinating because she met this man and they became good friends. and they drove around Europe together and then ended up in Japan. And he's like, I'm going to live here. And she's like, okay, I want to live here with you as well. Will you marry me? And he was like, yes, I'll marry you. And they've been together ever since. And her and I bonded over the fact that we both proposed to our husbands and that we both kind of, our lives just kind of followed our husband's aspirations, but not in a way that it was like poor us, but in a way that it led to something really cool.
Right. So I want to be clear that you did not propose to your husband.
Yes, I did.
You proposed to me and then I became your husband. But yes. I was not your husband at the time that you proposed.
I have proposed to you numerous times since we've been married. So I have proposed to my husband.
Okay, this is true.
And she proposes to her husband.
Okay. And I propose back?
Yes.
At a different time. You're not like, will you marry me? And I'm like, will you marry me? It's not a competitive thing like that.
Yeah. So her and I bonded over that. And then she lives way out in the boondocks that are really far, so we don't see each other very often, but we're in touch electronically.
Yeah. In Japan, it's called Inaka.
Yeah.
Which translates to something like the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. She's big time Inaka, and she's proud of it. And her kanji is beautiful because that's how she spent her days.
Mm.
She spent her days doing calligraphy.
See, I think no matter how much time I spent on calligraphy, mine would just like be awful. It's actually worse now than it was when I first started learning it.
Oh, that's such a misrepresentation.
Is it? You think it was awful back then, too?
I think it's a misrepresentation that you've been practicing it.
Oh. Okay. Is call out Chad time?
Yes.
Okay, yes.
Has anybody been paying attention to this entire episode? Christopher is sick and just reading Chad for Phil.
I have not been practicing writing kanji, and I have made the specific decision that I am never going to practice writing kanji aside from our address, because I don't write in English either. So why would I practice writing in Japanese? So I do practice reading it.
But well, and aside from our name and address, nobody wants us writing in kanji.
Right.
And so...
And sometimes even then they're like, no, let me copy it for you.
Yeah.
Except at the bank. At the bank, they're like, we're sorry, we can't even touch this paper.
Yeah.
And if you have made a mistake, you must fill it out. Yes. Let us bring you 50 copies so that you can get one of them correct.
Yes. So banking is rather strict here. So I'm super proud. Chad did something that was really awesome for me today. He figured out a way for us to record from bed because he has figured out that I am so sick all of the time that we actually need to record from bed. So we're using the new microphones, but still recording from bed. And Chad's using like a boom mic system.
Yep.
And I'm using a mic stand that like on a little tiny tripod. It's the smallest tripod I've ever seen in my life. And it's so cute. So it's set like on the bed. It's set on this beautiful leather thing I bought him.
Portfolio.
I bought for you like over 20 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah, it's absolutely stunning. And sorry, it's leather. It's gorgeous. That's the whole thing of it. And then on top of that is the tripod for the mic. And then this ginormous mic. Like the mic is bigger than the tripod.
I'll admit, I was dubious when the tripod arrived. I was like, I don't see how there's going to be enough room for the cable and that, because it's the fat XLR connector. So I just was astonished when it actually worked.
And so you're on that's a boom, right?
Yeah, that's a boom. Yeah.
So describe it. It's really interesting when you're setting it up. I knew what you were doing. And I'm like, I hope it works for him.
So it's a swing arm boom, and it's got the mic cage, and right now I have it pointing horizontally, but it can also go vertically. And I have it attached to my desk, which is near the bed. So most days, if I don't have meetings, I work out near the bed so that you and I can talk if you're not working. on days that when you and I both work, we go to our separate corners, like we're boxers, like we have to go to our separate corners so that I'm not hearing your therapy sessions. But
yeah, because I like there to be three doors, and I'm on the side of the house that has the kitchen, because my office is actually on the side of the house that has the bathroom.
Yes.
And so it was like, oh, this doesn't work, because I was just do paperwork.
Right.
I wouldn't see clients there. And then when we had to start seeing clients, I'm like, this makes no sense, because you can't go to the bathroom, because even though you can't hear me, if anyone hears a toilet flush, they're going to think that person's right in the room, because our toilet is really loud.
Yeah, even though it's a low flow toilet, I don't know why it's so loud. But I think,
like, the last bit of water that goes, like, at the beginning and the end of the flush,
it's very,
it's huge. Like, it echoes through the hallway. It's so weird. It's so weird.
But you know, the thing about it is that
I feel like flushing the toilet so they can hear it, but I'm not going to. Yeah. It is really loud.
It's quite cacophonous. Loud. But we've been living in this apartment for 12 years now.
Yeah.
Yeah, 12 years. No, 13 years now. Hmm. And it has never once clogged.
Knock on wood.
Okay, I'll knock on wood, but I've said this before and it still hasn't.
And I've always knocked on wood, hello.
But when we were in California, we had a plunger because it happened on a regular basis.
Yeah, we had so many plumbing problems in the house.
Yeah.
We replaced the pipes twice.
Yes.
In a 2-year span. And it got clogged on a regular basis.
It was very odd. But here, yeah,
they were low flow toilets, but I don't think that America gets toilets in the way that the Japanese do.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Our toilets do everything.
So the other thing is that even if the noise wasn't there, if the only time that I could use the bathroom was between clients for you, then you wouldn't have any time to use the bathroom.
Yeah. But the only reason that exists is because of how loud the toilet is.
Yeah.
It's really loud. It's really quite obnoxious.
It really is.
I don't like it. Every time I flush it, I feel like, ew, no privacy. Like,
there really isn't, because it backs directly onto our neighbors for the aforementioned plumbing centrality.
Yes, we hear other people flushing their toilets.
Yes.
I'm like, what the hell? So I don't like it. But the way that we flipped our house, our bedroom is next to our neighbor's living room.
Yeah.
And so I like that privacy.
And there's a concrete wall between us. So
yeah,
I feel like I only ever hear two sounds from any neighbors. One is toilets flushing, which I have no idea how far up and down the building we hear that.
They hear our vacuum.
Yeah. And then the other one is that there's a piano teacher somewhere in the building.
Yeah, we don't know where. I think on the fifth floor. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure. It carries throughout. And it's actually part of our agreement when we bought this, is that we would not play the piano outside the hours of 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And they never do. So I have no complaints. Like, you know. But like,
tell them. So there's this drummer girl on YouTube that I love. Nadia, I don't know what her last name is.
Nandy. And I don't remember what her last name is either.
If you look for the little girl who challenged the Foo Fighters to a drum off, you'll find her.
Yeah, Dave Grohl. I think if you just put in Nandy, you'll probably find her. But if you put in Nandy, Dave Grohl, you'll definitely find her.
If you put in little girl beats Dave Grohl at drum off.
Yeah.
Then you'll find her. And the first thing I said was, I would hate to be her neighbor.
Yes, that is the first thing you said.
And then her very first song was about her grumpy neighbor being angry that she played the drums all day Saturday. So she doesn't play the drums. She has like a really strict routine where she doesn't play it every night. Right. I just thought it would be so obnoxious to be next to the 9-year-old who's mastering every instrument in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't think about the cost of genius for the people around it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just the impact on the people around.
Yes. But like in the summer, how y'all kept me hot. It's now winter and y'all are keeping me cold because we can't turn the heat on. I'm freezing. I'm sick. Because in Japan, we don't have central air. In the United States, we could, like, the furnace was so noisy. It was obnoxious. It was noisier than the air cons are here. their individual heating and cooling units.
Yeah, and we had our issues with that, too. I have to go wiggle the wires to make it come on. It was a whole thing.
Yeah, and so, Rasta, when you hear this, don't feel bad that you haven't been hugging and kissing your mother every day, that you don't come over to snuggle me. Because that's, like, the whole point, is that you have a life, and that you have a private life, and that you're able to build an intimate life with whomever your partners may be. I don't know why I pluralized partners, but, you know.
Maybe he'll be poly. He's not at the moment, but you never know.
Our kid is so monogamous. He's so mono. But I just want you to know that you shouldn't feel bad or guilty about it. Instead, you should feel loved and prioritizing your mental and emotional health, because you should not be anybody's whoopee. And I tell that to everybody. If you're your partner's whoopee, that's not appropriate. Being your partner's caregiver and support person, that, you know, hey, that's part of being with someone who's disabled.
Mm-hmm.
And there are times when, even when I'm sick, like even today, there was some caregiving I had to do for Chad because he is disabled, and that's just the name of the game. And there are days when he is super sick and he has to do caregiving for me because I'm disabled. That's just the name of the game. And so I feel like just saying, fuck Dr. Phil. You can be a caregiver and still have a romantic.
I think if you don't ever want to be somebody's caregiver, just be single.
Yeah.
Because there's no guarantee that anybody will be as healthy one day as they were the day previous.
Well, who doesn't want to give, like...
I don't care about you?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to care about you.
Yeah. I like Squirmy and Grubbs, because she said, like... So I'm sitting at the movies. Who doesn't want to feed their partner popcorn?
Okay.
Like, how is that not sexy and cute? And then, like, kiss their partner. Who doesn't want to do that?
Yes.
And she gets, like, the best seats everywhere she goes. Her partner's in a wheelchair. And she's, like, looking at all of the positives. And she says when she goes out without her partner and she has to carry stuff, she's like, where is Shane? Where's Shane? Like, I hate carrying things because he carries everything for her. And she's like, it's so weird. So there are pluses and minuses in every dynamic.
So do you feel that way? Because when we go out, I carry everything for you.
No, I always have a backpack.
Oh, yeah, for balance.
Yes. Yeah. I'm very top heavy. Ginormous boobs are size double E. And so I have to have a backpack as a counterbalance. And I use walking sticks to help with that.
Yes.
And also to cause back problems. So why do you think you carry everything? How did that become part of your delusional narrative? That's delusional.
I think I carry packages. I'm not sure.
What do you carry, babe?
See, now I'm wondering, what do I carry?
What do you carry? Because you can barely manage your own bag, and you have one walking stick. So
okay, yeah, these days.
You wear dark glasses, and you walk with a walking stick, and you have a very pronounced...
I think when
limb.
When I was younger...
You have severe mobility issues.
But when I was younger...
When did you ever carry my stuff? Never.
There were years that I carried your son on my shoulders.
Okay, that's your baggage, not mine. I told you not to. I told you not to.
You did.
The fact that you carried him when he was 12 on your shoulders, that was an obscenity.
That was just because he couldn't see over the crowd, so he just hopped up on my shoulders so he could see at the aquarium.
Yes. Yes, that's completely normal. Like, just hop up on my shoulders, 12-year-old.
Guys do it with their girlfriends, so how is that not normal?
At rock concerts?
Yeah.
Okay, got me there.
Thank you.
Well, we hope that this was entertaining, and I love you, Rasta, and I hope that you're feeling warm and comfy in your jammies. Because we all got new winter jammies. It's something that we do every 5 or 6 years, is we all get new winter jammies, and they match, and we love them, and the fabric is amazing. But they are not paying us for any sort of shout-outs. We will not say their name.
Thank you, because, yeah.
Yeah, because they could have paid us $100, or they could have just given us free jammies.
Just free jammies, yeah.
Even... And we would have announced who their,
yep.
the jammy company were. But it gave them, like, a good mid-roll review and everything.
Yeah, mid-roll review. Yeah, that's what it is.
That's what it's called, a mid-roll review.
You're totally right.
That's like in the middle of the podcast, you mention something rather than at the beginning of end so people can cut it off. That's a mid-roll.
Yeah.
That's the lingua franca. Is that, that was off. That was awkward.
That's the lingo. Lingua franca means the language of money.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Okay.
So yeah, leave it in because that was cool. So we have a really cracking take two with lots of cool stuff going on with our project, with Chad's books. New stuff has happened.
Yep.
That we're very excited about. And we hope that you follow us on over to the take two. And we'll, if not, we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. You can keep the conversation going on our website at themusicsinjapan.com. That's the music spelled M-U-S-I-C-K-S. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at The Musics on both.
And if you'd like to support us, please visit our website to sign up for our newsletter, join a Patreon tier, or send us a one-time donation through PayPal or Ko-fi. We hope you'll listen again next week.
Bye.